presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks!
Many lives would have been lost if Captain America hadn't appeared.
Thrilling adventure and tense excitement, pounding action and spine-tingling mystery.
Welcome back to Comic Dorks. It is another episode of Comic Dorks. We're doing this one on July 23rd, 2019. And this is Comic Dorks for July of the self-same year. I'm Scott Johnson, joined again by Mr. Steven Schleicher. Hello, Steven.
Well, hello, Scott. This is a perfect time of the month to do this episode of Comic Dorks because the San Diego Comic-Con just wrapped up.
I know, you can still smell it. It's in the air. It's like
I think I caught the con crud and I didn't even go to the show.
It was just, it's hard not to get involved even when you are living and not going far away from it, yet we all catch its horrible diseases and its wonderful news. And I think we may have spoken in either TMS or an earlier episode of Comic Dorks about how it's difficult to say what Comic-Con will yield until you get there, because there's always like, oh, we know these things are scheduled, these people are talking, there's a chance this will happen. We don't really know until all said and done. And boy, do we know a lot of new stuff now.
Yes, we do. And there's some things. Now, I've talked about this before, that in some instances, publishers, smaller publishers, especially Boom Studios, kind of, I think, pioneered this, where they were like, look, we know news sources and our fans are going to be inundated by everything from all the other publishers. Mm-hmm. So for like 2 to 3 weeks before the show, we're just going to announce everything we're going to be talking about at the show. So before you even go into one of their panels, you know what it's going to be about. You already know all of the news items and information. And I think from a news organization, what Major Spoilers is, that is great because we have time to look at it and to share it and to talk about it, right, as opposed to being steamrolled by all of the other announcements that are coming out.
Right.
Certainly, when you look at something that is as big as Comic-Con, you see a lot of attention being put onto streaming media and television and movies, and not so much on the comic books themselves.
Yeah, it's nice to I use you guys for all that dissemination and parsing, right? Like having it all blasted at me at once from Hall H and every other corner of that convention is a bit much. I imagine it's even more so while you're on the floor there, because you're only being able to see what you're able to see, and you don't even know
right,
that some
exactly
big Star Trek thing happened just down the hall until you get home and find out later. But it is fun. It's always fun to dig through this stuff and see what happens. So we'll talk about some of the bigger stuff, some of the more comics related stuff. I think a lot of people out there who would listen to this show are already well aware of things like this, the Picard trailer, and mm-hmm. you know, a lot of this sort of ancillary stuff.
The Marvel stuff. And in fact, if people want to hear our thoughts and reactions on the Marvel Phase 4, I would suggest you go listen to the morning stream for July 22nd, 2019,
yep,
because we spent a good 20-30 minutes talking about Marvel's next wave or next phase of movies and TV shows.
Yeah, it was a beast. In fact, I have to think about that. Maybe I'll go excise that and put it on the feed or something, because it was,
there you go,
it was great. And we went through every single detail about what they said about Phase 4, about all the new stuff, everything from Shang-Chi all the way down to, I don't know, what was another new thing?
WandaVision.
WandaVision. You explained WandaVision to me finally. So if you're hearing this say that now and you're like, what the hell is WandaVision? Don't feel bad, because I didn't know. and it's it's a little silly. It's still, in my opinion. But a lot of this stuff is streaming TV news, like a lot of weird stuff. So if you want the full Jimmy, that's the place to get it on all of the movie announcements, because you know, as much as we are into that stuff here, we're obviously a little more focused on the comic side of things.
Yeah, but I mean, we can talk really quickly. Let's talk about two media related things.
Yeah,
first of all, Avengers Endgame is done. The Russo brothers were super huge in ushering a lot of what Marvel did in those last couple of phases, especially all the Captain America stuff, through production and out. But now they're going to take a little bit of a break from anything Marvel related. Instead, they're going to be working on, are you ready for this, Scott?
Yeah, tell me.
Battle of the Planets.
Oh, my Lord.
That should be very, very cool. also, I believe Magic the Gathering, they're going to be working on, I think, a TV show based on Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah. This was maybe a month ago. You heard rumblings about this. Was anything at the con there to detail that, or is that still just
sort
of floating?
That's all still just kind of, you know, they just kind of mention it as their panel's going on, as they're talking about Avengers Endgame and what's next. But, you know, they mentioned Magic the Gathering. They've mentioned the Thomas Crown Affair. They've mentioned Grimjack, which is a comic book from the early 80s that they're going to take a crack at. And then Battle of the Planets are just some of the other things that they're working on. So if you think the Russo brothers are done and completely out of making movies, that's wrong.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling they'll be back to Marvel eventually, but their plates are kind of full at the moment.
Yeah, those are exciting, diverse, weird things to jump to. I'm very excited to see what they did with something like Battle of the Planets. I mean, that thing was a staple of my childhood. I love that thing.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. And definitely it'll be interesting to see whether they're looking at the American edit version of Battle of the Planets, or if they're looking at the Gatchaman series and really diving into a lot of the stuff that was edited out for our childhood from that series.
Plus, they've got some production stuff they've been doing too. I can't remember the name of the movie. There's some heist movie that I think even Anthony Mackie's in, or someone like that, or maybe
Is that Cherry? I think it's Cherry.
Is it Cherry? Yeah, and they're not directing, but have some production. But those guys, I'm guessing, have kind of a ticket to go wherever they want now and do whatever they want. So
I'm pretty sure. I mean, they're kind of with $1 billion now, the number one movie moneymaker of all time.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure they can kind of walk wherever they want, and people will give them whatever they want.
Take that, James Cameron. Do you think James Cameron puts out another full-page ad like he did for Titanic? He'd have to do it again for Avatar? Or?
He did issue a statement when Endgame beat Avatar and said congratulations.
Nice.
So I don't know if he's going to do anything else beyond that or not.
I think he's going to just try to make Avatar 2 a huge success. I think that's what he wants to do.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see.
We're going to be talking a little bit more about Alan Moore in just a little bit, but one of Alan Moore's creation, The Watchmen, is getting a continuation in HBO form. And I didn't know if you had a chance to see that new Watchmen trailer, Scott.
Yes, I did. I saw the one previous to it as well. First one was much more teasy and couldn't really tell what was going on. I guess I'm going to be a little surprised at how much Don Johnson we're going to get. He's all over this thing. I think I'm equally excited and curious about what that means. But of all of the upcoming television stuff, there are a few things that really stand out to me and make me most excited. And one of them is Watchmen and what that is all about, how they're going to handle that. This trailer answers some questions that I had. But I'm very interested in that. And at the same time, I'm interested in the news that there is a 40K, Warhammer 40K series from the guy who did Man in the High Castle. Mm-hmm. He'll be showrunner there. That's extremely exciting. And then the Witcher series coming to Netflix. Those are probably my three that I care about. And I guess I'm happy to say I think the new Watchmen trailer looked great.
Are you gonna keep your HBO subscription?
Oh, yeah. For that and a few other things I'm interested in, but... I will definitely keep it around for that. There's no question. Like that looks like what I want out of an extension of that world. I'm looking forward to it to being a little gritty. I mean, this is HBO after all. This is Damon Lindelof, who gave us The Leftovers on HBO, which is another favorite show of mine. Say what you want about the way he helped end Lost back in the day. He absolutely stuck the landing with The Leftovers. I just love that show. If you've never seen The Leftovers, listeners, you just need to watch The Leftovers. It's three seasons. It was meant to be that all the whole time, and they made three incredible seasons of a really great show with a great sci-fi twist, and I just absolutely loved it. But to see what he'll do and folks involved with that show are going to do with Watchmen is very exciting.
And if you are a fan of what you saw with The Witcher, then I would suggest you follow Henry Cavill on his Instagram, because he does a lot of sometimes shirt off stuff if you're into that. He also does a lot of the weightlifting and a bunch of his diet things that he eats to maintain his figure. Yeah. And he also releases a few things about The Witcher here and there.
Yeah, I know a lot of people at first were like, Superman, The Witcher, really? Whatever. He's a British actor who is built for The Witcher and is the perfect casting for this. Like, he's not the problem with the Superman movies that we've gotten of recent years.
No, he isn't
the problem. He's perfect. He's your right guy to cast. You just wrote terrible stuff around him, and it's your fault, not his. So hearing that he's going to move on to this and that they might actually do some real justice to that character. It's one of my favorite video game series of all time. The 2015 game Witcher 3 was probably still, it's in my top three video games ever made.
Awesome.
And the books are popular on their own. Like, they don't need the games to have its own fandom. So, you know, this is not just some, hey, let's make a video game into a TV show thing. This is much bigger than that. And it has a chance, if they can pull this off, it has a chance for Netflix to pull out their own real Game of Thrones competitor here. And it could be great. So very excited about
that. So let's talk about some new comics that are coming out. Certainly a lot of people may have a bad taste about the X-Men in their mouths following the most recent movie, but Marvel is pushing ahead with six new X-Men titles, all led by Jonathan Hickman, coming up in the next several years, including Marauders from Jerry Duggan and Matteo Lolli. Excalibur is returning. We've got X-Force, Fallen Angels from Brian Hill, The New Mutants from Jonathan Hickman, who's going to be writing the first arc on that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, a brand new relaunch of the X-Men series from Jonathan Hickman and Lionel Yu.
That should be interesting. A relaunch of X-Men comics sounds an awful lot like, and we might have new movies coming down the line at some point. Like, there seems to be a renewal effort after that abysmal performance of Phoenix, Dark Phoenix, or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And also hints on stage from Feige as well, saying, you know, yeah, we got mutants in the future.
Right.
They all own it now. It's time for them to really go for it and get X-Men back to where they were. An A-list published title, an A-list movie franchise. Like, it has taken a backseat because of mishandling by Fox, in my opinion, for too long. MCU just finished its major arc. Time to bring in those guys. I know we're trying to stay away from TV and movies, but that's exciting to me, but also more excited about a new series in comic form than I have been in a while. So I'm ready for a resurgence of X-Men.
Yeah. And so just so people kind of have maybe some backstory on this, because Fox had the X-Men, there was some real animosity between, and I'm forgetting the head of Marvel at the moment, but there was, and a lot of people say, no, that's not true. There was somewhat of a decree of, let's start downplaying the X-Men and start canceling their titles and dialing that back, but instead let's ramp up the Inhumans, because that's what Marvel still controlled. And so we did see for a time no real X-Men titles on the stands. In the last couple of years, we've seen some small series launch. You've had X-Men. We've also had X-Men Blue, X-Men Red, I think was the other series.
Yeah.
So we've had the X-Men around, but now when we have all beginning in, I want to say, October and November, when we have six new series launching in the next 3 months, October's 3 months away, November 4 months away as of this recording, that's pretty big. That's pretty epic. And I think for people who are fans of the X-Men, they're going to be excited about this. I think there's also going to be some people who are a little upset about this, because you're going to have some characters taking on new titles and new roles, especially under the the Excalibur book. You're going to have a new Captain Britain in that. You're also going to have, I forget what the other book is that's going to have a different character playing a titled hero. And then, of course, the one that people are going to be very interested in seeing is Apocalypse on an X-Men team.
Oh, my Lord. But that's crazy. That's like, I don't know what that's like. That's like Lex Luthor hanging out with Superman for the weekend. Like,
yeah, which, of course, they've done that as well over on the DC side. So, Scott, do you have a favorite X-Men character?
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite hero on that side, on that property?
I think so. I mean, I've jumped around a lot over the years and kind of gone back and forth for a long time. Wolverine was the only character I really cared about. And then I was kind of on a Scott Summers kick for a long time. Probably, though, these days, if I had to pick one who's my favorite, I haven't thought about this for a while. I really like, and I don't... This is going to get me some hate mail. Maybe. I don't know. But I really like... his name just left me. Sorry. Throws the cards. Gambit. Man. Gambit. I like Gambit.
Yeah.
Gambit's cool. So, and I like Nightcrawler. I guess Gambit and Nightcrawler are kind of the two I like right now.
Okay. So Wolverine will be appearing with Jean Grey in X-Force.
Mm-hmm.
Gambit, I don't remember where he's going to pop up on this, but if you want to read a kind of an interesting... husband-wife dynamic X-Man team, you need to read Mr. and Mrs. X, which features the adventures of Gambit and Rogue, who are now married, and the adventures that they have in the Marvel Universe.
And they can, if they make out, does she explode with cards like all over the place?
I don't know. Okay. Actually, it looks like Gambit and Rogue are also going to be in Excalibur number one with Apocalypse and Jubilee and Richter. And I thought I saw... what's his name? Bishop was going to be on Excalibur.
Oh, I do like Bishop.
He's in another one. I do. No, like he's going to be on the Marauders team. Sorry. Bishop. Too many teams, too many characters, but they're going to spread them out, and we're going to see all the X-Men's coming out in the next couple of months.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Bishop, Cable, of course, Deadpool, those are all, what's his name, created characters.
Liefeld?
Rob Liefeld, yeah. Didn't he do Prophet? I think Prophet was his.
I can't remember. Everything I think it's.
I guess what I wanted to say about that is this is just a side note. Liefeld gets so much heat for so many years about his weird art and his bad proportions and his, you know, just, you know, people think he's just kind of a hack, or people have said that. I've heard people say this. I think it's kind of ironic that some of the most entertaining, long living, best representations these days are his creations or stuff he helped work on. I just think he deserves some credit.
No, and I've given him crap over the years too about, you know, everything that you hear people hate about Rob Liefeld, whether it be his Captain America with the big bosoms or his inability to draw feet. I mean, I've given him crap too, but at the same time, I follow him on Twitter, and he is the most positive person I've ever met. Yes, he will tell people to, you know, shut up, or he'll mute them or block people.
Right.
But he takes criticism with kind of a grain of salt and just lets it, you know, roll off his back like water off a duck's back and everything. But he is just super positive about that stuff. Yeah. Now, I have a theory on why you think that characters like Deadpool or characters like, a particular X-Men character or things that are coming up are super popular in media now.
Yeah.
And it's because the people who are creating media now were the teenagers back when, you know, Image launched and they were doing all of the Deadpool stuff when Rob created all that stuff. And so now the people that are fans are now the creators, and they're going back to the things that they loved in their childhood.
That's a great way to look at it. I hadn't thought about that. You're right. I mean, it's true of a lot of this stuff, right? Like anytime.
Oh, yeah. It's the reason why you and I think that 1984, or maybe you don't, but why many of us in our age group think 1984 or 82 through 86 is the best time for movies ever, is because that was our coming of age.
Oh, yeah. And now that we're all, again, we've aged into creatorship, or those who are our age, that generation, that's why you see this stuff getting redone. That's why you see something like Stranger Things taking off like it did, because it's riffing on all those things that were so big during those years. 100%. Like even the dominance that we see from Marvel right now in the cinematic universe is all about everyone coming of age and doing it right, because they had some rad comics to read in the 80s.
Right.
So I think that's a great thing. And I think Rob Liefeld deserves his moment, and I'm glad he's having one. But back to these X-Men titles, anything about them that would lead you to believe we're talking about fresh, hot new storylines? Are these rehashes? Are we starting over? Do we not know enough to say?
I don't think we know enough to say right now, except Jonathan Hickman he's a really good writer, and he comes up with some very imaginative and very solid stories. So what's happening is he's not the writer on every single one of these books, but he is writing an X-Men book that I think is going on right now. And then that is going to launch. Oh, The Dawn of X is what he's writing now.
Yeah.
And when that concludes, that's when this whole new X-Men line comes out. And even though he's not writing every issue, he's guiding the entire story through all of these. So he's kind of like the Kevin Feige of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's the one saying, here's what we're going to do in all of these books and some of the big overarching stories that we're going to experience here. So if you're a fan of Jonathan Hickman, and you really should be a fan of Jonathan Hickman, I think you're going to enjoy some of the stories that come out of this new X-Men wave, or at least the first arcs of these new X-Men.
Yeah, waves. Feels like tip of the spear stuff. I'm excited to see where they go. You said you noticed something weird about the DC panels. Not weird, but just something you noticed. I'm very curious about what that was.
Yeah, so remember I said at the beginning of the show that a lot of times we get these announcements ahead of time from publishers so that you know when you go into their panel what they're going to be talking about and what they're going to be promoting. This year, if you look at the summaries of the DC panels, DC did not have a lot of really big new announcements like, hey, this is the next big comic arc, or this is the next big world-shaking event that's going to have people talking for months and years. And instead, I noticed, now they did have a few announcements. There's a really cool Adam Strange story coming out next year from Tom King.
Oh,
actually, it comes out in October from Tom King.
I love Adam Strange. That is great news to me.
Yeah, it's called Strange Adventures, and it's got Doc Shaner, who does some wonderful art. It's got, as I said, Tom King writing it, and he's going to look at modern fascism as his overall theme in the Strange Adventures.
Wow.
And how does a hero, you know, fall and those kinds of things. So that should be very, very interesting. So they had some very minor announcements. But one thing that I noticed as I was going through the summaries of the panels is, especially ones that Dan DiDio was on, he was bringing up creators and just saying, hey, do you remember what was great? Or do you remember back when we used to do this? And do you remember, you know, these directions and things that we did? And instead of having a comic panel that was, we're promoting our stuff, we're promoting our stuff, we're promoting our stuff, it's really a conversation about topic X, whatever that topic may be, and getting involvement with the panelists that were present. Yeah. And I really dig this idea because, as I've kind of said over the last couple of years, comic cons, comic conventions, whether it be San Diego or any of the others, really tend to lean towards movies and TV, like we spent the first part of this episode talking about. And then you have the panels that are just like, X-Men are coming, X-Men are coming. But then DC comes along and says, hey, we just want to talk about comics and our love for comics and what makes comics great. We're not here to really promote anything, but we're here to talk and interact with our fans. And that is the best thing about any kind of a convention, is when you can go and you can go up to a creator and you can shake their hand, you can ask them questions, or when you can sit on a panel and there's a topic or a discussion that you're interested in, not just the next big thing, but hey, here's what we really enjoyed about doing comics this year at DC Comics, and what did you guys think about this? And let's get those kind of reactions. So the thing that I noticed most about the DC panels is that it's a conversation about comics, not necessarily a conversation about us telling you what you should be reading from us next.
Interesting. That's good, I guess, right?
Like, I think it is, and I'm hoping that going forward we see a lot more publishers taking this approach instead of it just being an Apple press conference or a Xbox conference or a Sony press conference, that this is really more of an engagement with, we are sharing you stories that you're not going to get on a website like Major Spoilers because we didn't send them a press release about this stuff. We're having a conversation with you, the people in this room, and that is what makes coming to this convention special.
Yeah, I like that. It's basically, I don't know, they feel like they're in a bit of a, not rebuilding year. Their comics are selling great, and you know, all the standards are there and that. But if you also tie in their media side, their DC Cinematic Universe, things are sucking over there. But they got great animation going. Like, it feels like there's a chance for them to be in a bit of a rebuilding phase and get fan feedback and like involve them in a way that they haven't before.
Most definitely. They could have had an entire panel. Now, Brian Michael Bendis didn't go to the show, but they could have had an entire panel talking about a year after the Action Comics relaunch, the year after Bendis has joined us. They could have done a whole thing with Brian Michael Bendis. They could have done a whole panel on what's going on with Event Leviathan, their big conspiracy series that's going on right now inside the DC universe, which is fantastic, by the way. Mm-hmm. But they didn't. Instead, they're just like, hey, let's bring up Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Conner. Let's talk about, you know, great things about comics and some big highlights that we remember in the last couple of years in DC Comics. And to me, that is something that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's, and also feels like Comic-Con is made for that stuff, you know?
Yeah, and that's what it should be. And if you want to be a publisher, and DC did send us a couple of their announcements ahead of the show. There's a new Joker book that's coming out in October called The Joker Deadly Smiles, I think is what it's called, that looks at what happens to a suburban family whose father is a psychiatrist who's had interactions with the Joker and what happens when the Joker comes to the suburbs. So that could be very scary, but they sent that out, you know, a week before Comic-Con. So they didn't really have to talk about it during the show because everyone kind of knew about it. And I'm hoping that more publishers realize that and really take a different look at, are we here to promote or are we here to create an experience? And I think creating that experience is far better than here's our press conference or our fifth press conference of the day.
Yeah.
You know, the Frog Pants, the event that the Nerdtacular that you do up in Utah,
yeah,
is kind of like that. I mean, yes, you can get all those shows and they're streamed, but it's the experience of being able to engage with creators and your favorite podcasters that people who go to Nerdtacular remember most.
Yeah,
they don't remember, oh, Scott made an announcement about his next podcast at the show.
Right. They don't care about that stuff. They care about that, you know, the getting together and the experience of that social construct and everybody meeting for the first time, or people you've been hanging around with online, you finally get to meet them. Like, all of that stuff matters. And I would even say, you know, despite the fact that it's a lot of explosive stuff happening on set or on stage for Disney Marvel, even they seem to have a good handle on that. Like, that was a much more casual sort of thing. Kevin isn't doing, you know, he's not up there giving a Apple keynote. He's talking to the audience. He's getting them riled up. You know, it's more like a weird concert, if anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
So I'm hoping that we see more conventions do that. Yeah. And again, I know there's people probably screaming at their AirPods or whatever they have in their ears at the moment. Ah, but there are conventions that do that. Yes, I'm not saying that there aren't panels at conventions that talk about LGBTQA plus representation in comics, or there's not a panel that's talking about the history of XYZ product or whatever it may be.
Right.
But I would like to see more publishers take that stand of, let's create an engaging experience with our audience, as opposed to just talking to the audience.
Yeah, no, and moreover, it's at the granddaddy of them all, at Comic-Con in San Diego. Like, that's your, if you're going to, you know, if you want to see the example, that's the place to do it. Everything else will follow suit. Like, I totally agree. And I this year in particular appreciated the somewhat moderate pullback from just full blast TV movie, you know, big star stuff. It just, it felt like a little bit of a reset, not in a negative way, just like a, hey, Comic-Con, check this out. We're here and we're rad. And isn't this awesome? And they had some really cool panels and, you know,
And one of the other things that happens at Comic-Con that I think is a really big deal that people just kind of look at and then just move right on past is the Will Eisner Awards.
Oh yeah. Let's talk about who jumped out as the big, the winners you either expected or were excited to see and all that.
Well, we were mentioning Tom King a moment ago. He won the best short story for The Talk of the Saints that appeared in Swamp Thing Winter Special. He did that with Jason Fabok. The best single issue went to Chip Zdarsky, who is A Riot and a Half for Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. And the best continuing series went to Giant Days over at Boom Studios from John Allison, Max Sarlin, and Jula Madrigal. Those are... Oh, and then, of course, Mr. Miracle won for Best Limited Series, another Tom King bit from Tom King and Mitch Gerards. Those are some really good comics. And if people are constantly coming to me, and probably to you too, Scott, and saying, what should I be reading? What should I be reading? What should I be reading? Go and look at the 2019 Eisner Award-winning list, and you'll find some great limited series like Mr. Miracle. You'll find some good new series like Gideon Falls over at Image Comics from Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino is bizarre, scary, and really, really good. So if you're looking for stuff, just look at people who are winning those awards. Go and look and see what people are talking about. Maybe you've never read the Swamp Thing Winter Special, but I guarantee you that Talk of the Saints was a fantastic short story. And if you've already read some of those, go look at all the other nominees in that list, because I'm sure you're going to find something really good there.
Yeah.
Scott, have you ever pushed some of your friends to nominate you for like best web comic?
Oh gosh, no.
You haven't gone over that Scott Kurtz guy and say, hey, Kurtzy, how about you help me out? And
I mean, he might even be willing to. I've never had the guts to ask. Like, even in the early days where I was feeling my mustard and feeling like I really knew what I had going on and everything, I don't know. It's the least thing I would probably ever do is ask someone to do it. If someone did it, I'd be beyond honored, but there's no way I'm asking. It's just not me to ask.
Well, I mean, the Eisners do have a category called Best Web Comic.
Yeah.
And yeah, they do. I think you should start rattling some chains and getting somebody to nominate you in the future.
I should get someone to do it for me so I don't know they're doing it. That's what I should do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah, because I can't. It feels...
So if you're listening there, Scott Kurtz, next year, get on the ball and nominate that Scott Johnson.
Yeah, get right on
for
that.
An Eisner Award for Best Web Comic.
Yeah, he's been up for that before.
He has, and I believe he's won in the past too.
I think he did as well.
He's won a couple of them.
I think he has as well. There's some really good writers or some really good winners there. Anyway, if you want to see the full list, majorspoilers.com has it. They have everything from best lettering to best inker, best lots of stuff. The short stories make me want to go check all of those out.
You really should. I mean, really, you should. And most of those, if not all of those, are going to be available via Comixology. So if you don't have a comic book store in your location, or if they don't have a series that came out a year ago, you can definitely get it on a digital app.
Now this.
Deep in the heart of the city, a clandestine meeting is held by the members of the deadly enemy, the Secret Empire.
Ah, that'd be us. We're going to talk about Alan Moore. Now, I don't want to blow anyone's mind, but we just got word in the last week or so that Alan Moore, famed comic book writer Alan Moore, responsible for such amazing products as The Watchmen, or Watchmen, not the Dark, not sorry, I said Dark Knight, V for Vendetta, Swamp Thing, he did an amazing run there, and so much more. Killing Joke. My brain is slowly farting them out. He is retiring from comic books and writing in comic books. And I heard that and went, what? You did that 20 years ago, didn't you? Like, I was sure that that was like a joke, because hasn't he long retired from comics?
No, he's stepped away from many years ago, several years ago, in fact, is drawing comics, because he just doesn't have the ability to draw like he used to. Mm. And so he's mostly been writing in the last, I want to say maybe 7, 8, 10 years, something like that. But he has stepped away, and he's doing projects that only he's interested in doing. Now, we've mentioned The Watchmen a couple of times in this show. Alan Moore is the writer behind that. But Watchmen is also that property that caused him to say, I really don't want to work for major companies anymore, because they were not supposed to do anything to Watchmen besides release the Watchmen book. And after it went out of print, the rights to the Watchmen were supposed to revert back to Alan Moore, and DC has kept the Watchmen in constant print ever since. Mm-hmm. And so Moore sees that he's kind of getting screwed out of certain rights. He doesn't feel like Dave Gibbons is been given enough credit or money for everything that went into the Watchmen. And so he kind of had a big fit, a big blow up with DC many, many, many years ago. And every time, especially when the Watchmen movie came out, anytime that they try to send him residuals or checks or anything that he is legitimately owed for creating any of these properties that these comic book companies are trying to profit off of, he either tears up the check or he signs the check over to the other collaborative creators on those projects, because he just doesn't feel like publishers are treating their creators appropriately. Mm. That being said, Moore has gone on and has been spending the last couple of years doing some very interesting projects with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen that he's consistently been doing since, I want to say, 2009, when he started doing League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Century. And the final issue is just wrapping up, I want to say, this month or next month.
Okay, so that'll end that run, I guess.
Yeah, and that's where he's basically said in the back that this is his final issue, my final story. And he's just going to go and do whatever retired writers do.
That's a comic called Providence that's run through 2017, May of 2015 through 2017, totaled of 12 issues. Excuse me. I'd never heard of that. I don't know what that even is. It's some horror genre deal, but I've never heard of Providence.
Oh, no. If you go through all the stuff, and there's a great big bibliography of Alan Moore work on Wikipedia, there's a good chance you haven't heard a lot of his stuff, because it's very small, one that gets a lot of... I think it's on a couple of banned book lists, is his Lost Girls, which is very adult, very erotic comic. Mm. And, you know, it's just one of these things that he does, and a lot of people don't know about it. So do you have, I mean, we know about Watchmen, we know about V for Vendetta, we know about Ronin, we know about The Killing Joke. Do you have any, like, really big favorite Alan Moore books that just stick out in your mind?
Well, I know that I can say pretty unequivocally that Watchmen just changed me as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
The comic itself just blew my mind, and I've read it, I don't know, 10 times or something. I'm also one of the, I don't know if I'm the few or the many or whatever I am, but I'm one of those people that likes the film adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's perfect, but it's a really good effort to try to nail down what Watchmen is and make it work for a bigger audience.
Right.
I really loved his work on Swamp. It's the only Swamp Thing I like is his run. I really liked that a lot, and I thought it was really something. If I had to pick a favorite, I think it has to be Watchmen, but close to that would be The Killing Joke. That thing really got me as well. And it's funny, it's Killing Joke and Forward. I don't really think about any of that other work, and it's because I haven't consumed it. But if you look at what he's done seminal, amazing work, but it's not that much. Like, it's not, you know, go look at Bendis's resume and you'll be like, my gosh, did the guy ever do anything but write comics? So it's weird. It's almost like he's got these big footprints with big chunks of time in between them. And you always hear about how mad he is about how Hollywood treats his creations. They've only done it, what, three times? Four times?
Well, they've done, let's see, there's Watchmen, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is really the thing that he's been super consistent on,
right,
in the last, well, I'd say 15, 20 years,
yeah,
is coming up with that series, which is really good. And if people don't know about League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, say for the movie, it is, what if all of these classic literature characters were real and they were part of a, you know, a superhero team,
right,
more or less. And so there's some really good stories in that. What else has he had for big media,
I mean,
related?
He did front. So From Hell was a film.
Yep, From Hell. Also, thing. Ronin was, I believe, wasn't that with, Robert De Niro, I believe, was in that, right?
Oh, was that his? I didn't realize that was the Ronin.
I believe, yeah, V for Vendetta.
Yeah, V for
Batman
Vendetta.
Batman the Killing Joke is an animated movie, which was totally, totally changed from the source material. Constantine.
They screwed that one up.
Yeah.
Bad. Oh, here it is. Okay. These are the official, meaning his creations.
Mm-hmm.
From Hell, 2001, 2003, right. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, also the last film of Sean Connery's career.
Yep.
2005, V for Vendetta.
Mm-hmm.
2009, Watchmen, and 2016, The Killing Joke animation. Those are the only ones that are like his.
Right.
To work with. So you're probably right about Ronin and others. I don't know. I thought Ronin was more like.
Oh no, that's Frank Miller. That's who I'm thinking of.
Frank Miller. Yeah. You know what? I do that too. That's the other thing. Him and Frank Miller get mushmashed all the time.
And like, again, probably because when we were really starting to get into comics and when these creators, you know, the Neil Gaimans, the Frank Millers, the Alan Moores, they were just all right there in front of us all at the same time. So it can be sometimes easy to conflate the two.
Yeah.
Or three or four, however many that are out there at that time.
So. Yeah, no, that's true. Those two are just, for me, they're synonymous with a big change in comics. And between Dark Knight and Watchmen, I mean, those two things were so impactful for me across all of comics. And I realize I say this, everyone says this, but those two things were just like, man, this is what comics can be. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah. And especially with Moore, because he really kind of proved him and Miller with the Dark Knight Returns. But Moore especially really showed that, you know, you can lift the idea of what a comic book is higher than just kids are, comics are for kids.
Yeah.
Where today you see that as the headline or the intro paragraph of every comic book related story that media puts out. But he really proved it back in the day of like, look what you can do with comics. Look what you can do with these stories. And Watchmen is that big one that just says, hey, look what you can do. Swamp Thing is the other one.
Right.
But I wonder though, Scott, when you look at, you know, Alan Moore's complaints about the comic book industry, and especially how he feels like he's not been treated appropriately,
sure,
by DC or maybe some other publishers. Do you think that publishers are treating their writers or their artists, whether they be staff or freelance, do you think they're treating them correctly? Do you think they're giving them a fair shake? I mean, that may be too much to talk about in this show.
Well, it's definitely a thing we could go on about for a long time, but I would say that it feels like, oh, we're probably better at this now. And this is all from the past. This is Alan Moore growing up in a time when it was different. And those guys who created Superman, well, that was just a very different time. And Stan Lee not really getting recognition for a long time. And, you know, all these kinds of complaints we've had over the years about these creators not getting their due. I wonder sometimes if I think it's better now and it's not. I don't know, actually. Like, if there's a creator at Marvel that comes up with the next great villain or hero, which I know they don't do a lot of new stuff anymore, but if somebody did, in the way that McFarlane helped bring Venom to life or, you know, whatever, would they be the next victim on the list of people that didn't get compensated properly for the thing that they then made, you know, that Marvel then made millions on? I don't know. Like,
I don't really know. And I know there's probably some comic book creators, artists, writers who are listening to this show who do work for DC and Marvel who might want to reach out maybe even anonymously, or we can, you know, hold your name back and let us know on that. But I just know that there was a, I just saw a thread on Twitter recently where one of the creators of a popular comic book character from the 70s, there was some new merchandise being put out that looked really, really cool. And the creator of that character was like, hey, any chance that I could get one of these?
Yeah.
And just this idea that, yeah, why wouldn't the publisher give this? I mean, it's really weird, right? I mean, you hear these stories about Mark Hamill, who when his contract for Star Wars is like, I want one, my contract states that I want one of every Star Wars toy ever created from now until the end of time.
Yeah.
And he now has like a warehouse of toys. And why are publishers not doing that with the people that are writing their books? I mean, when I write a book, when I was writing for Adobe years ago, my thing was I get 5 to 7, you know, copies of the book that I can do with whatever I want with.
Right.
And if I want to get more, I will get a deep discount. Why wouldn't you, if you have a really cool statue and a writer comes to you and says, hey, I wrote this movie that you're basing this on. Can you kick me a few tickets?
Yeah.
Or is there any kind of residual that I get now in more modern day? Yes, that's some of those things have been addressed. But things like a really cool pair of sneakers or a statue or action figures. I mean, why are you not just sending that out to the creators and saying, thank you for doing this? Here is, you know, what we've come of that.
Some may be doing that. I hope they are. It seems like the right thing to do at a bare minimum. But I think it's easy sometimes for something to be made. And then there's almost like a collective assumption that it came from wherever it came, but now it's here and it's ours. And now let's just keep moving forward. And you know, you forget about what it took to make the thing. On the other hand, I've heard people say, well, you don't see, you know, South Korean Simpsons animators coming forward and saying, hey, that great episode everybody bought the plushie for, I drew 8 frames in that. Where's my cut? Like, there's weird arguments on all sides of this thing. My main takeaway is when you've got somebody like, I don't know, let's use McFarlane again, because, you know, Image really sprung out of this problem. Like,
right.
Image exists because we're like, you know what? We're sick of not controlling our creations. We are now going to control them. And it does to this day. And I think that's its great legacy. But at the time, you know, McFarlane's like, okay, one of the biggest villains in the history of this franchise. I don't think he gets a dime for the Venom movie. I don't think he gets anything for Venom stuff. And I forgot the other guy's name that helped create it with him. I always forget his name. Anyway, neither of those dudes get jack squat for anything to do with Venom.
Right. And a lot of that goes back to, you know, people who were working are always considered freelance unless they're hired under a specific non-exclusive contract, that kind of thing. So that's where a lot of, even going back to Siegel and Shuster, how they were like, look, we could really use some health insurance. Can you guys help us out because we created Superman? And they went to court for years and multiple times to court for years with DC to try to sue for the rights to who created Superboy and who has those kinds of things. But I think that even if people want to be, even if a corporation wants to say, no, you got paid for your work, it's now ours, go away. At the very least, if I'm doing Venom merchandise, why not send some stuff over to McFarlane? Why not? Of course, he's probably making the merchandise with his McFarlane toys.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he circumvented everything. Like, he got around it all, but yeah.
Yeah, oh no. But I mean, at least kick these guys something occasionally to let them know that you're appreciative of everything that they did to contribute to the program. But at the same time, that may also cause bigger legal issues down the road as, oh, you're acknowledging that I created this, so therefore, now you owe me even more money, or I don't know. It gets complicated, but I would like to hear from some creators out there who maybe work for some of the bigger publishers, what their thoughts and reactions to some of this are, especially from Moore's perspective of how publishers don't treat comic creators, quote unquote, right.
Yeah. I would like a documentary about the man. Unfortunately,
I think there is one out there.
Is there? Okay. If there's not, there needs to be. If there is, I'm going to find it. But I wonder how cooperative he would be with such a thing. A lot of the interviews would have to be earlier stuff or things based on what he's written, because that dude is notoriously sort of counterculture.
Yeah, this movie came out in 2005. It's called The Mindscape of Alan Moore. There was also one that came out in 1987. I'm pretty sure the one in 87 is a little bit more out there.
Yeah.
But the Mindscape of Alan Moore basically says a story of his development as an artist, starting with his childhood and working through to his comics career and impact on that medium and its emerging and his emerging interest in magic. So it gets a little bit into his occultist viewpoints.
Oh, it looks like the entire thing is on YouTube as well. Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. All right, well, that's good. I like that kind of stuff. Oh, and he's in full caveman here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, he,
what's really funny, too, is go and look at some of your favorite, like Frank Miller. Go, you have this idea of what Frank Miller looks like. You have this idea of, you know, scary, you know, druid Moore. And then you go and look at him today and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are old and it's time to, you know, give them the respect that they deserve.
Well, his story writing is,
if they haven't already.
Yeah, his story writing is some of the greatest in the history of ever. And so I'm pro Alan Moore. He can be as weird and as reclusive and as anti-establishment as he wants to be. He wrote some of the most amazing tales and comics I've ever read, and there's clearly more I haven't. And so I'm looking forward to maybe checking some more of that out. More.
Yeah, and if you want to see more, Alan Moore's daughter, I believe her name is Leah Moore. Mm-hmm. She has actually done a whole bunch of Sherlock Holmes stories for Dynamite Entertainment. So you can actually read, you know, what his children are doing, just kind of like today with Joe Hill and Owen King, you know, the sons of Stephen King. You can go and see what they're doing, and it's all because of their fathers. And Leah Moore is the same way. So go check out some of her stuff. She's done it for Dynamite, the Sherlock Holmes stuff. She's written some Tom Strong stuff for Top Cow and some other places.
I didn't know about Owen King. That's news to me. Is he?
Yeah. In fact, yeah, he's actually written, what's it called? Sleeping Beauties. He and his father collaborated on and I have no idea what the book is about, except that it's called Sleeping Beauties, but that is getting a comic book adaptation from a smaller publisher. And I can't remember who it is off the top of my head. Maybe IDW Publishing is who they're doing a comic book adaptation of. Owen King. I have to look that up, but, his book Sleeping Beauties that he's done with his dad is getting comic book treatment. So
that's awesome. Very cool. I really like his brother's work. So
Joe Hill's stuff is really good. His Nosferatu television series has been renewed for another season.
Yep.
And if you ever get a chance, I'll always talk about this all the time. If you ever get a chance to read Lock and Key, do it.
So
it
good.
Is brilliant.
So good. Yeah. It's the best. I think you're the one that got me reading it. I loved it. Just absolutely one of my favorite comic experiences. Speaking of comics that have a huge impact on me, that's up there, man.
Mm-hmm.
Way up
there.
Yeah,
definitely.
Well done, Stephen King, with your fathering or whatever you did.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it for the show. We do this every month, as you may know. Maybe you don't. I don't know. Some of you are coming back and going, wait, this exists again? Damn straight it does. Go to comicdorks.com if you're looking for more information about the show, where to get it. How to contact us online, all that stuff. ComicDorks.com, of course, is our website. ComicDorks@gmail.com. Send us comic news or views or comments or feelings you have right there. We'd be happy to talk about them on the show. That's ComicDorks.com or ComicDorks@gmail.com. Sorry. And you can send us voicemails now. 801-471-0462. That's 801-471-0462. We'd be happy to play your voicemails here as well. You can find us on Twitter @ComicDorks. Major spoilers for Steven. You can find me @ScottJohnson. And more shows like this at frogpants.com. Steven, any final words of wisdom or thought before we go?
Read more comics.
Read more comics! We'll see you guys next month. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Why not send some stuff over to...